三季兔。
Hello and welcome to Auti Talk, a monthly podcast about autism and people on the autistic spectrum. I'm your host, Louise Crooms. I hope you had a great Autism Awareness Week and saw lots of great stories about autism in the media. I made a couple of videos which I will tell you about at the end of this podcast. This is episode 3. I'm going to be talking to Meg, who featured very briefly on episode 2 with her dad, Andy. She has more time now to talk about her story, and she's waited such a long time for a diagnosis. So we'll be talking about that and her experiences of school. Jed will be back, the autism specialist nurse, to talk about ASD, the diagnostic process in children, and some of the common misconceptions about autism that are in the media and in society's minds. And I will be having a rant about something that affects me at this time of the year. I wanted to do Auti Talk to get the word out about autism and get the words from autistic people and their advocates about what it's like for them. One big issue for me and my family is around women and autism. I took a long time to get diagnosed, and so did my daughter, who I fought very hard for. And recently I can tell you that she has been diagnosed on the spectrum after a much bigger fight. But there was a big difference between how my son and my daughter was treated, even though they have the same condition. When I met Andy and Meg, I was worried that my daughter would take as long as it took Meg to get diagnosed. And it was their story, in a way, that really helped me to fight for my daughter. So I'm so grateful that they've agreed to do this podcast. Welcome to episode 3. It's called Girl. Let's start with the first part of Meg's interview, where she talks about her diagnosis and a little bit about her love for drums.
Auti Talk.
How old are you, Meg?
15.
And when did you get diagnosed with ASD?
In February this year.
Ah, so it's really new.
Yeah.
And how does it feel now? Do you feel any different after the diagnosis?
Yeah, I just feel myself now.
That's great. Have things changed for you in any way?
Yes. In school, I struggle massively. So I get lots of help, because sometimes I don't always know what a person's saying. So if you say something, I misunderstand many things. I try and sort it out, but I just kind of laugh. I'll laugh because it's just me and I can't understand.
It's Auti Talk.
Now, I heard you played the drums, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, how did you start drumming? What age were you?
A young age, I think of about 6.
And how did you manage to convince your parents to have a drum kit in your house?
I can't remember that, actually, but ended up getting it.
It just was there in the garage.
Yeah, it was just there.
How loud are you, Meg?
On the drums, very loud. I'm really heavy-handed, so once I'm set at my kit, I'll just play and forget everyone and everything is there. So I'll just play really loud.
How often do you do your drumming, and is there certain times you're not allowed in there?
Yeah, usually about 9 o'clock onwards at night, and I'm not allowed. I try to push it a bit and go in at night, but it don't work.
What is it about drumming? Tell me, because I don't know about drumming. You sat there at the kit. Tell me what it's like.
So most people say that it's about hand coordination, and you don't... when you sat at a kit, you've got all these different cymbals and drums in front of you. You don't quite know what to do. But if you listen to music and different beats in songs, you start to get the feel of it, and then once you've listened to it, it kind of, with me, it sticks in my head, and then I can just play it naturally.
So you taught yourself how to drum?
Yeah, and I like the noises of how the drums sound. It just gives me a kind of good vibe.
Auti Talk.
Tell me about school. It's hard to go to school. I don't think people really remember or think about how difficult it is to spend the full day there. Why is it difficult for you?
For me, there's a lot of things to it and about school. For one, I am in mainstream school and I don't know how I've coped for that long, which I have, but I don't know how. And noise is a big issue. Noise. Sensitivity to noise is quite severe, I would say. And my understanding of how people around me learn, whereas I struggle to learn most things, just hard to understand it in my head. Like, maths is really difficult because I cannot process numbers. It's just like someone's just speaking to me. I don't know what they're saying.
I think people think of Rain Man. Have you ever seen the film Rain Man from the 80s? You might
no,
not have.
I
no.
haven't, no.
It's a film that has Dustin Hoffman. I think he won an Oscar for it, and Tom Cruise. And Dustin Hoffman plays a man who is autistic, but a savant with maths. So he can card read, he can calculate things really quickly. And I don't think many people knew what autism was until they saw this film in the late 80s. So they think that people who have autism are good at maths.
Yeah.
I'm not good at maths either, so we're living proof that maths isn't a thing. And you're in the classroom, you're feeling anxious. What else happens?
I feel like shouting at people who are being too loud. I feel like just shouting them and hitting them. Because it's pretty annoying, because I can't do that, because I'll get in so much trouble to the point where I could get excluded or anything. And then if I did that, then I'd have, like, things took off me, maybe, to make me realise what I've done. And then that'd make me upset, but then I'd just have to say or do what I need to say. When it's things like group work and things like that, that's not always good if I'm not with a person that I know.
One of the worst things I've ever heard said is get into pairs.
Yeah.
Do you hate that?
Yeah.
I find it the worst thing ever.
If they say that, or if they say get into pairs or get into groups, then in my head it'll just be like, no. Just simply no. I could just stay sat there, let them shout at me, and I wouldn't bother.
It's hard to talk.
And what can teachers do that would make it better for you?
I think teachers could be a bit more aware of if there was a student in the class who needed more help. Because one thing that I struggle with in lessons is when you've been given instructions and you sat there and you can't remember, like, from seconds ago what they've just said to you. So if they were to maybe tell you in a different way or, like, help you with the work differently so you can understand it better.
Have you got somewhere where you can sit in the classroom? Is there a favourite place you like?
Yeah, it's always at the back so I can see what's going on. It's how it's manageable, because I don't know how I've managed. I don't know. And I'm going into year 11, so it's been tough for all this time, but then to only just find out is annoying, because I could have had more help earlier and not had to struggle as much.
It's hard to talk.
More from Meg later on, where she's going to be talking about her love for the Asda man who comes round and delivers stuff to her school. She makes sure she gets a good view of him when she looks through the window. More from her a little bit later on. It's now time for this.
It's Auntie Rant.
Do you know what I hate this time of year? The duvet. I hate my duvet. It's so, so very irritating. I can't just lie there with no covering. That would be just awful. I would be totally unprotected. Not that a duvet really does protect you from anything. I mean, what use is it to protect you from anything at all? It's always too warm. The weather is changing and I can't just lie there with no sheets. I have to have the duvet on me, but I wear it for about 10 minutes and then it's boiling hot. I'm so abs-
absolutely boiling, and it takes so long to unwrap its covers all the time. To get, you end up getting your hands in the duvet cover and climbing into it like a ghost, trying to get the duvet cover every time you do the washing. And it's just too warm. This got too warm this time of year, and now I have to have this awful duvet on me that's just too heavy. I have it on for 10 minutes, and then I have to stick my leg out or my arm out just to act as a sort of temperature control. You could have a summer duvet, get to a lighter one, but you can never quite work out when the exact time of year it is to move on to the summer duvet. And then the summer duvet is too thin and too strange, so you have to work out exactly when to get the duvet out. Some people have different sized duvets that they join together, a little one and a big one that they separate out. Well, that's a complete nightmare, because what are you meant to do with the spare one afterwards? Where do you put it? There's no storage for it. And don't get me started about togs. What are togs? What does it mean? Why do they measure duvets in togs? Why don't they measure it in normal weights like everybody else? It's so confusing. And then you have different types of duvet. Synthetic ones make you very sweaty. The goose down ones have bits of feathers sticking out of them. They're a total and utter nightmare. What do I do? I go to sleep with a duvet on me, and then I have to throw it off halfway through the night, completely boiling. It is an absolute nightmare. Who invented the duvet? And what is a tog? I'm so glad I got that off my chest. If you've got any advice of what to do with my duvet, then please let me know. I do have a weighted blanket, but my daughter has ended up taking it for herself, so maybe I need to get another one. I do find that quite calming, the weighted blanket. Back to Meg and her interview. Now she talks about school and home life and how she has a special love for the man that delivers the groceries.
Auntie talk.
Meg, what are your worries in life?
I worry about the world itself and going to new places, meeting new people, certain sounds or a certain sense of something that's different to me when I sense it, and just being able to maybe release what's inside me when I need to, when I wish I could, if I was at a certain place, but then I wouldn't want to because there'd be that many people there. That just
what do you do that releases it?
Releases what's in me. So this is where home life and school life is different. I'll just be on a mad one, basically. That's how I can describe it to you. Just be on a mad one and just scream. Sometimes lash out at people, and I wish I never did. And then for that matter, I then feel the need to hurt myself because I've hurt a person. So then it's that bad in my head that because I've hurt them, I have to do it back to myself, to make myself realise what I've done.
And what does it feel inside when you feel like that?
It actually makes me depressed inside. Not to the point where I want to die or anything like that. Just it's just quite depressive to think that I can hurt someone close to me when it happens, when I'm releasing what I need to. And it's been hard for me to keep it in before I got diagnosed, but now I'm able to do it, but I've just got to learn how to control it a bit better, even though it's hard. There's some things that can't be controlled and they will just happen. Like just the repeating of certain phrases or shouting out. Or if seeing something dead cool that's outside your house and then you just like shout everyone and tell them it's there. Like when the postman comes every day, there's a postman that comes to my house and he's usually the usual postman, and every time he comes, I'll be like, oh, he's here. Or like the Asda or Tesco man in school, who gave me a fist bump once. I remember it. I walked past him and I said, Good morning, asked the man.
What did he say?
He said, he just gave me a thumbs up. I think he was too busy to even speak anything back.
I bet he made his day.
Yeah, probably.
Why do you get excited about the postman and the Asda man?
To be honest, I don't know, but I find it pretty funny.
Auti talk.
Were you 15 when you got diagnosed?
14.
14, so it was before you were 15.
Yeah.
It's a long time to wait until 15.
Yeah, it's felt like forever. It's felt like all my life, even though I'm still young.
You've been waiting?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you might not have it?
There was a time when I was a bit unsure about it. I kind of said to myself, yes and no. Because I used to just... I couldn't really make sense of the world and things around me like everyone else could. It was like feeling excluded from everything. Whereas months before I was ready to get diagnosed, it come to senses more in my head that it was going to be likely, because things just started coming out and I just couldn't hide it anymore, which is when I met the Asda man.
So it can be good things and bad things, so excitement and more harder things, more upset. When you said you're different at home, how are you different at home? What do you do at home?
But I'm just basically more myself than I am in school. In school, I hide everything in as much as I can, because for one, I don't want to be getting shouted at, even though if someone was shouting at me, I wouldn't really bother, because I just let them shout at me. I'd just sit there and just sit back and let them shout at me if I ever did something. The only thing I have done in school is threw some glue at the front of class in maths, because I got mad and I just couldn't do the work. But then I was laughing afterwards.
What happened when you threw the glue?
They contacted home about throwing glue. That was the funniest bit. It was not like I'd had a fight or anything with someone else. It was nothing as major as that. But throwing glue, just random things like that, I just laugh it off afterwards.
This is Auti Talk.
You wear a badge, don't you?
Yeah.
What does your badge say?
I have autism, please be patient.
Has that helped?
Yeah, for me it has, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether some people have maybe seen it as attention-seeking in any way or anything like that, but for me it gets worn every day because I just seem to get relief from having the awareness, and not like if a person knows me but they didn't know I was autistic. So it's like that. So it's like I wear it so that people know.
Has anyone said anything hurtful about it?
No, never.
That's good.
Which is good.
It's a good response. What other subjects do you like at school?
Art is something else that's really therapeutic to my mind. I had a bit of a downfall in school at one point because I sometimes have difficulty going into lessons and being able to sit in the lesson for the full hour. So that was a bit of a setback for a while. But
what happened? What did they do with you instead?
They just kind of said, she can just work outside with my music on, which is what I'm allowed to do in PE as well, rather than me feeling uncomfortable in PE and having to do what everyone else is doing. I can just make sure everyone else is doing what they're supposed to be doing.
So when you walked into your classroom and you knew it was a day that you weren't going to be able to go in, what's the thoughts and feelings going through your mind?
I just feel pretty lost in myself. Just kind of like there's a mental block there, and it's just something is stopping me from going in. And if I was to go in, it's forcing myself. So then if I ever forced myself, it would make matters worse, because I would then be annoyed at myself, because it'd then make me upset for going in when I'm having difficulty going in.
And what have the teachers said? If you stood at the door not going in, what have they said to you?
In my head, I'm kind of laughing as they're speaking to me. I'm not physically laughing, but I'm laughing in my head, because sometimes they've asked me, "Oh, why aren't you coming in then?" And I'm like, I don't know. But then because they understand and they know me, then it's not like I can get shouted at or anything, because they know how to help me then. So they'll just give me some work and I'll just go elsewhere where I can be able to sit and work without people around me. I think it's sometimes the anxiety of people around me that gets to me a lot, unnecessarily.
And you were waiting until you were 14 to get diagnosed. Did you do this before you were diagnosed?
Yeah, I used to truant lessons sometimes. And I did get in trouble for that, but again, it didn't really bother me. I just let them say what they needed to say to me.
Where did you go?
When I was skipping lesson. Just wandered around, and I'd get caught, but I'd just go with the flow.
This is Auti Talk.
Back to Meg's interview in a moment. The third part of her interview is coming up. Let me just tell you about an email that I received at autitalk.com. If you've not been on there, have a look, and you can contact me through the contact form. It's from Zoe. Now, she's written a lovely message, which I really wanted to share with you. She's been diagnosed for 5 years. She got diagnosed in her 20s. And she says that she really appreciates this podcast. She likes me and Andy in the previous podcast talking about our likes and dislikes. And she's found it really comforting. She says it's almost like, and I think this is a brilliant way of putting it, it's almost like tuning into a radio from your home planet. Thank you, Zoe. That is such a lovely message, and I really appreciate you getting in contact. Let's keep the dialogue coming. Get in contact if you want, and don't forget to review the podcast, please. Whatever platform you've seen it on is the only way that we can beat the algorithms and get this podcast appreciated and listened to by more people, so we can get a real community dialogue going on. Thank you very much, Zoe, and let's go back to Meg.
Auti Talk.
It took Meg 7 years after her first assessment to get formally diagnosed. I'm going to talk about that and her love for football.
Why do you think it took so long to get diagnosed?
For me, I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding with me and how I've been far from being a young age to how I am now. I think there's been a bit of a misunderstanding.
What have people misunderstood?
By seeing certain things that I've done that's different, and then seeing that as, why is she doing that? Why does something not seem right? But then when you've gone to a doctor or a professional to speak to, and they've said, oh, we don't think she is, that's been annoying, because you know something is not right and something is different, but they're like just kicking you out and just telling you to go away when there is something there that you know is there and you need help with.
How did you get their attention in the end to get you diagnosed?
Well, it was my mum and dad, because they just said that it's been ongoing for so long. And it feels like forever.
What did people say it was? What did the GP and doctors say that they thought it was?
They just basically said that it was my child development of me growing up, just in a different way. But then as I started to get older, that was not good for me, because I knew I was different. and I just wanted an answer. But the wait was the worst bit, having to wait is for it. It's not good because you just want to know so you can have the help.
When you did your diagnosis, what was it like? What was the test they did?
The lady who gave me my diagnosis was actually pretty funny because you go and sit in a room and I sat down and she said, right, so we're here today. And then she said, do you think you are or not? And when she asked me that, I didn't actually say anything because it was a yeah, but I just didn't want to say it. And then she just kind of tells you, but in a way that's not telling you as though, oh yeah, you have autism, not like that, just gradually telling you so that you kind of know what she means, to give you the idea in your mind that you have it.
And what was the test like that you did? How did that go?
That was, when I had that done, that was actually pretty intimidating because there was two people in a room and the other person at the other end of the room was just looking at you 24/7 and she was just writing down everything you was doing. And I was like, she's a little freak.
Did you say anything? What's this woman doing?
I didn't call her a freak, but I wanted to.
What are you doing? What are you doing writing all this stuff down?
You're just basically invading my life here.
And what did the sort of things that they did with you or asked you about it?
They just give you different activities to do. Things like a book with pictures in, like social stories, which tell you a certain situation or something that gives you a better understanding of it by seeing it visually, which is something that helps me a lot, seeing things visually rather than having to waste time reading words. Just seeing a picture just is easier because then in my head I know what it means. I'm really into sport as well.
What do you like about sport?
Football, because for one, I'm an LFC fan with my dad. And every time there's a match or highlights, I will not like to miss it. I've just got to watch it.
Do you go and see matches?
The odd time I do, yeah. Which is a big thing for me, so I have to be in like the right frame of mind to do it.
Tell me what's that like? Imagine that you're going into the stadium now, what happens?
Well, it feels like I can't process anything. I can't like identify where I am properly because there's that many people around you that it's like your sight goes fuzzy, maybe. That's what happens to me sometimes. Your sight goes fuzzy and you feel trapped more than anything. But then, you know, once you're in and once you're in the stadium and you're chilled in there before the game's about to start, that you're okay because you're in there. It's just the build-up to it. That's the bit. It's just being able to actually go in with feeling okay.
So you have to feel well enough to go in.
Yeah.
And then you have to get in. What happens when you're in the stadium?
I sit back and I'll go, oh, I'm in now. I'll either say it or that's what goes through my head. I'm in now.
And what happens at the interval? Do you do anything? Or half-time, I should say.
Half-time. Go and get food.
Is that okay, or do you struggle with the people?
It can be okay if my mind's fixated on what I'm actually having to eat.
And then what's it like at the end of the match?
Does
it depend if they've won?
Yeah, it does. Because then the atmosphere's different. And then there'll be the opponent's team, if they ever won, they'll be going out. They'll be raving as they're going out. And then they'll be us and we'll just have our heads down. But if it was the other way round, I'd just leg it out. And then I could end up a missing child, possibly, because I'll just run off. I'm not happy about it.
So you're just full of... What does it feel like inside when you win?
I feel like screaming. It's just really... It's a really good feeling to have when I'm happy.
Is there any type of person that you have difficulty with in a personality, or is there anything that anyone can do to you that makes you particularly angry or struggle with more?
The only type of person I can think of is an Everton fan.
No problems with people, as long as you're not an Everton fan.
Tell me... a United fan, which unfortunately my uncle is a United fan and he lives in the same house.
I'm so sorry for you. What about Everton fans? What's wrong with them?
It's the colour blue. Dark blue and red don't mix. They're not good.
But you should like Manchester United. They're red.
No.
Never. What do you say to your uncle then?
He's a devil.
Arty talk.
Do you find that people, well, they normally either Manchester City or Manchester United, aren't they, here? Do you find any Liverpool fans?
The odd one or two.
And then
so when I see the shirt, I'll just wave at them because I've got to do that because I've just spotted a Liverpool shirt, so I'm not going to pretend I've not. There was a kid in Manchester once and he had a black Liverpool shirt on and I was really focused, really just focused on my music until I saw this kid with a Liverpool shirt on. You see a lot of... In Manchester, usually City, United, sometimes Arsenal and Chelsea as well, just dead randomly.
What do you do if you see someone in a Liverpool shirt? What did you do to that boy?
I remember it. I just took my earphones out. Just could have ripped the wire out of my earphones. I just waved at the kid and they're like, "What's she doing? I don't know her." And they must have thought I was going to... They must have thought I was going to come and batter him.
And really, you were just a big fan.
Yeah.
Arty talk.
Thanks so much to Meg. She's been an absolute superstar. I just think she's brilliant. And she's waited a long time for a diagnosis. She got there in the end. And I'm just so proud of her that she's proud of who she is. And don't lose that, Meg. You've been fantastic. She's made a video for the BBC too. And I will share that on our Twitter, at Arty Talk it is. But it's got an underscore. So it's at Arty underscore talk. You'll find us on Twitter. And I will share my video about misconceptions about autism that we made for the BBC. She's been brilliant. And I really think that she's got a bright career ahead of her. So I will look forward to getting updates from her and I hope she keeps in contact. Well done, Meg. Brilliant stuff. Talking about misconceptions, let's talk to Jed, our autism specialist nurse, about why there's so many misconceptions for autism.
It's Jed.
Why do you think people should get diagnosed as children? We talked about adults and I know children isn't your field, but what are the advantages there?
I think, like I say, I don't work with children, but I think if somebody has a diagnosis, I suppose the earlier someone's got a diagnosis, the more the people around them will come to terms with that and the more people around them will understand them. Hopefully, school will understand them and might be able to make reasonable adjustments in school to make sure that person is successful in school. And it might be reasonable adjustments around, you know, if they've got loads of sensory issues, can they sit in a certain place in class, or will school understand why they're going to struggle in a busy environment? So what can we do to change that? How can we help that kid become as successful as everybody else? But I think also they won't go, hopefully, through that a whole years and years and years and possibly decades of thinking, I'm a little bit different to other people. I'm struggling with things that other people don't seem to be struggling with, and I just don't know why. I'm sure there are some people that have had a diagnosis in childhood and see it negatively.
I think some parents think that you're labelling a child for love, and I think teachers are a little bit apprehensive about pointing anything out, because suddenly, oh, if we say they've got it and they haven't, what does that mean? People start to get very funny about whether you're going to shape a child's life based on a label.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also logically it makes no sense. I understand the thoughts behind it, but if a child is sent for a diagnosis, you're not going to make that child autistic just because he's gone to see a specialist. If the child's autistic, they'll get a diagnosis, and if not, they won't. I suppose sometimes the diagnosis might be done incorrectly, I suppose. I've not come across that particularly, especially getting a diagnosis when someone's not autistic. I suppose some parents and teachers might think it's a negative label and therefore want to avoid it. I do hear of some people who had diagnosis as a child and the parents didn't want them to know because they were worried that if they told them, I'm not quite sure, but I think they thought if they told them they might somehow not become more autistic, but if they didn't tell them, they'd become more normal almost, which again doesn't make sense. I suppose we all need to sort of come to terms with the things that we find easy and the things we find difficult, and the more we know about ourselves and the more we understand why something's hard, hopefully the easier life is. But also then people get to adulthood and they don't know why they're struggling and they can't ask for work to make a few adjustments or explain to people why they're going to struggle doing certain things. Therefore, they think it's their fault.
What are the main issues that people are reporting who are on the autistic spectrum?
So I suppose when people come to us, I suppose in terms of, not so much for the diagnosis, but in terms of their own personal life, a lot of people come to us for a diagnosis and they're feeling very isolated. They're feeling like they haven't got... So a lot of autistic people say, I struggle to socialise. That doesn't mean I don't get lonely and don't feel isolated. Sometimes getting the diagnosis helps people in terms of understand how much socialising that person wants rather than being forced to do too much. But quite often a lot of the problem is that the people I meet, they haven't got that opportunities. Maybe they found life really difficult and school was really traumatic, and then by the time they get to adulthood, they haven't got the same social networks as maybe everybody else, but really crave those social networks. There are people that come to us that are struggling in terms of struggling to hold a job down or struggling to get a job, because getting a job is hard enough for anybody. If you're an autistic person, then a job interview is likely to be it's more difficult. So you're going to have to meet 3 new people, and you're going to have to answer questions really fast, and you're going to have to, you shouldn't have to, but you might feel obliged to give those 3 new people eye contact, which is going to make you even more anxious. You're probably going to have to exaggerate the truth, which most people I meet, they're autistic. That's not one of the things that they're brilliant at. It's sort of, I'll give you an honest answer, but if you ask me what my weaknesses are, a lot of autistic people find that really challenging, not just list 5 of their weaknesses, whereas the average human being might sort of fudge it a little bit and sort of...
I'm making a strength a weakness. That's a good trick.
Yeah. So there's an...
Say, oh, I work too hard. That's a good one.
Yeah. So getting for you foot in the door to get a job is really difficult. And there's loads of autistic people at the moment that could be out there doing really good jobs that society's missing out on because they can't... They're not the best person at the interview. They're the best person at the job, possibly. So we're trying to find agencies now that will help with that and maybe get people sort of, rather than a formal interview, sort of a work-based interview, which I think a lot of places are doing anyway now, for not just to be autism-friendly, but just to make sure you get the best member of staff.
When you described autism as an autistic spectrum condition rather than autistic spectrum disorder, do you feel that it is a disability? Does it have advantages alongside it?
I suppose it depends on the situation somebody's in. I don't think it's for me to decide whether somebody... I think autistic people themselves, the autistic person themselves, should decide whether it's a disability or a condition or a disorder. And it might feel different at different times of your life. So if there's a time in life that you're finding really challenging, and some of that is because of your autism, then I can see why people would say this is a disability, this is really impacting the way I'm living. I suppose if the world is set up in a more autism-friendly way, then autism would be seen as more of a condition. So it depends on the environment somebody's in. In the same way, I wear glasses, and if nobody invented glasses, you could argue that I had a visual impairment because I wouldn't be able to drive, it'd be dangerous. But someone's invented glasses years ago, so it's not a disability, it's just a condition. I'm short-sighted.
What do you think needs to change in society to help people on the spectrum?
I think people understanding... The start is always understanding. People aren't going to make any change unless they understand the challenges that autistic people face, but also the fact that if society aren't engaging in autistic people and autistic people aren't working and thriving, then society's missing out as well. And things are starting to change, aren't they? So they're starting to have, like, supermarkets will have an autism-friendly hour, which is a start. It's not brilliant because people are autistic for the whole of that week, and if they can't get to the supermarket on the hour, then there's no advantage to that. But at least it's people are starting to think about, and because in an autism-friendly hour, they'll turn the lights down and they'll turn the tannoy off and they'll make it quiet. At least that's starting to make other people in general society think, actually, well, those are things that autistic people struggle with. So maybe other people will start to relate to their own workplace and think, what can we do to make sure an autistic person come into my shop or my bank or, you know, my leisure centre or whatever it is, so they can use the services the same way other people can. So the only way things are going to change is if people understand what would help, but before that can happen, people need to know why people are struggling with certain things. And the world's never going to be perfect, but, you know, in my head, if a supermarket can cope for an hour without loud music and without loud beeps and with the lights dimmed down, I don't know why they need to turn them on at the end of the hour, because during that hour, nobody died. It was all right.
It's fine. You can just have those things anyway. And that's because people on the spectrum find processing sensory input difficult.
Yeah, so almost everyone that I meet has some sort of sensory issue. And I think sensory issues are probably the hardest thing to understand if you don't experience them. When I do training, I tend to use a video that's supposed to replicate what it's like to have sensory overload, which is probably close to, but it's never going to be the same. And I get my friend that I do training with to explain what it's like, because he can explain it infinitely better than I can. But I suppose, especially in terms of like a supermarket, most people I meet would say, going to a supermarket is, I'm already massively anxious, my senses are already feeling overwhelmed. And then if it's really bright, for a lot of autistic people, a really bright light isn't just an annoyance, it's a really uncomfortable, really unpleasant feeling that will then mean everything else starts feeling really too loud. And then maybe touch might become oversensitive, and it's sort of all the senses can get to the point where it's too much information. Therefore, especially if it's a young child that's autistic, you might see a young child in the supermarket just seemingly to other people having a tantrum. It's probably that child's just so overwhelmed, it's learned the only way I can get out of this is to sort of shout and get removed. But there's probably also adults in that supermarket that kind of feel the same, but have learned that I can't have a tantrum, I just need to get myself out.
As much as we'd like to lie on the floor, I'd like to have a lie down. What do you think the main misconceptions that people have about autism? Even people that are autistic sometimes don't know.
So that can sometimes hinder someone getting a diagnosis, because they might have their own misconceptions. They might have read something somewhere about autistic people can't. Somebody recently said to me she thought she was autistic for quite a long time, but she'd read somewhere that autistic people couldn't have empathy, and she's really empathetic, so she couldn't be autistic. And that's just a really old-fashioned, stereotypical view of autistic people. Almost everyone I meet that's autistic is really empathetic and really interested in sort of social justice and the world being fair. They might sometimes struggle to pick up on other people, how other people are feeling, so they might not always react as quickly or as intuitively as everyone else. That doesn't mean they don't want everyone in the world to be all right and be, you know. So I think empathy is one of the big misconceptions. That women can't be autistic is a ridiculous misconception, but I still meet people who've been told by GPs not to worry about autism, they couldn't be autistic because they're a woman. I suppose a lot of stereotypes come from TV, don't they? And I suppose a lot of people, when they think of autism, they think of Rain Man.
In the 80s.
Yeah, from the 80s. So some people might think if someone's autistic, they must have some sort of super duper ability to do something. I do meet some people who've got amazing abilities. I do meet people who are just got normal abilities like me and everyone else because they're people. So lots of autistic people are amazing, but it's not like if you dropped 100,000 matches, they'd count them straight away, because that's a very unusual autistic trait. But I think it's seen as, you know, loads of people must be some sort of savant, I don't like the word, you know, must be able to like hear a tune once and be able to play it on the piano. And there are some people like that. But I think most people that are autistic are people that are autistic, that their abilities might be, you know, being amazing at the job or being amazing mum or dad or whatever it is. It's not just, you don't have to have some sort of unusual, quirky, amazing strength.
Thank you very much, Jed. That brings our podcast to an end. What a very busy episode we've had. Thank you to Jed and thank you to Meg for their amazing input, as always. Good luck for the future, Meg, and please keep in contact, won't you? If you'd like to find out more through blog posts or previous podcasts, then you can have a look at my website, autytalk.com. Remember to contact me on the contact form. Thank you to Zoe, who said that this podcast was like a radio station from her home planet, which is the most beautiful compliment I've ever received. Thank you so much. There is a video out that I did for the BBC, which is about the misconceptions about autism in the public. So the idea that it's mostly boys, that it only really affects children, and that we're not very social and that we don't have emotions. People in the public know a lot about autism, but sometimes they get a little bit of the wrong end of the stick. So I'll be clearing that up. Give us a follow on Twitter. It's at @Auty_talk. I'll make sure the video gets on there and you can let me know what you think. I will be doing another Auty Talk next month, as usual, the first Friday of the month, which will be in May. Please review and share this podcast as much as possible to get the word out. Next month, I'll be talking about age with someone who got diagnosed much later in life. And Jed will be back with more of his great wisdom. I'll see you next month.